Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Welcome to New Horror Express, your weekly podcast channeling to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's podcast, I'm chatting to Sarah Zanotti and Katie Almond about their latest movie, Fae, a movie which is unique not only because it is a one-woman horror movie, but also because it was shot entirely on iPhone. In the interview, I talked to Sarah and Katie about what they did to avoid the film feeling stagey, how they made it so it's not obvious it was shot on an iPhone, and whether Sarah was intimidated by being the film's sole on-screen presence. Elsewhere in the interview, I chat to the pair about the origins of their production company, their first feature Rattled, and what projects they have cooking up next. All of which and much, much more you can hear right now in my interview with Sarah and Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Welcome to New Horror Express.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. We're excited.
So I've got you on the show today. Well, to kind of talk about two of your films, Fae and Rattled. Starting with Fae, can you give us a brief spoiler-free synopsis of the film Fae?
Katie, I'm just gonna let you take this away.
All right, Fae is the story of a personal growth author who is grieving the loss of her husband and working on her next book when she goes to an isolated cabin on the Louisiana Bayou to finish the book. She is haunted by an unnamed presence. How's that?
Dun, dun, dun. And Rattled. Yeah, I'm going to let you take that one too.
Rattled. Okay. Rattled is the story of two estranged sisters who are reunited after their mother's death. And this one's tough. I haven't talked about it in a long time.
No, I know. That's why I made you do it.
And some childhood traumas are unveiled, and it becomes sort of a story of obsession between two sisters.
Yeah, they're forced to revisit their family's murderous past.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
So you co-wrote both of these films together, taking Fae first. What was the initial inspiration for that film?
We actually were in pre-production for Rattled when we decided to write another feature-length script because we're psychopaths. So
yeah, we had a little free time, and
we had a little free time.
Yeah, the other producers were taking over a lot of the duties that we had done originally, and we had a little free time. And I remember we were at the office, and Sarah looked at me and she's like, "Katie, I have a dream." And I was like, yeah.
No, we were on the couch.
We were on the couch?
Yeah, we were watching TV.
That's what I meant by The Office.
Oh, The Office. Yeah, The Office is our couch because we are roommates. Actually, the entire living room, kitchen area is just The Office.
Yeah.
Because we're businesswomen.
And Sarah says, "I have a dream." And I was like, "What is it?" And she said, "I want to be in a movie." And I was like, "You're about to be in a movie, like in 2 weeks." She goes, "No, I want to be in a movie where I'm the only one in the movie." And I said, "Okay, because we're each other's yes men. That's how this works."
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, we just started brainstorming that night. And honestly, the real spark of inspiration was just, how do we make a film with one character?
In one location, basically.
In one location.
That's good. Or that has substance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we just started kind of like brainstorming it. A lot of times, like, Katie and I will, like, I'll wake up in the middle of the night having dreamed a scene, and then I'll just like text her and be like, okay, I got something. And same thing kind of goes for her. So we kind of, I don't know, we marinated on the idea for a little bit.
You had the first scene in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yeah,
we decided to make her an author. And then somewhere in the middle of the night, I remember waking up and texting you, let's break this movie down into 5 chapters. And each chapter is a stage of grief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where it started.
Okay. Okay. And in terms of like your writing process, do you like write separately then come together? Or like, are you just kind of going back and forth all the time? Like what, how did the kind of script come together?
Yeah, we basically like, I block a week off in our schedule and just go.
We just go to town.
We just go, yeah.
Sometimes we take Vyvanse.
Sometimes we take Vyvanse. And
maybe
I'm going to pretend to know what that is.
Oh, Vyvanse.
Like Adderall.
Yeah. maybe cut that out.
Maybe no, don't say that.
But we've kind of got a system down now. At the time, Faye was only the second script we'd ever written. We had written Rattled and then Faye. And now the process, we always write together.
It's way more streamlined. We write on Writer Duet software. So like we can be, she can be working around or walking around the room. Sarah usually like channels a character and then I'll just kind of banter with her as well, whatever other character is in the scene and just, you know, type as fast as I can.
Yeah. A lot of the dialogue is kind of improv'd between us. Mm-hmm. But the week leading up to the week we've kind of blocked off for the actual writing of the script, we will, it's just kind of on both of our minds, whatever idea it is or concept that we have, we kind of figure out what we want the beginning to be and where we want it to end. Mm-hmm. And then we just sort of let our minds go wild for the week and just imagination and all of that stuff. So that by the time we sit down to actually write the script, so much of it is already there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start by writing a really detailed outline and then the next day try and write 10, 15 pages. And every single day, that's our goal.
Yeah.
And we try and knock out the first draft of the script in a week.
Yeah.
Because again, we're psychopaths.
Yeah.
It does seem like everything's had like a very quick turnaround.
In terms it has.
So what was the time between like the initial inspiration, writing the script, and then getting into like shooting Faye?
Well, Katie and I have only known each other for a little under a year and a half.
Yeah. Fast friendship, fast business partnership and creative just flow.
When you know, you know.
Yeah. So I'll say basically because we did
in
these
the
movies,
last 18 months, you've created a production company with 2 feature films.
Yeah.
2 features. We're about to shoot another one in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And we've written 6 scripts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, I honestly think that when, you know, I think people just think about doing things for a really long time. And that's honestly the holdup. Or they get caught into some sort of like a perfectionist loop of trying to make something better and better and better and better. But I believe that if you meet somebody who kind of complements your creative abilities the way that I feel like, you know, we kind of, I don't know, are yin and yang in a way.
Yeah. It's a balance for sure.
Yeah. If you're lucky enough to find somebody that you can have that type of creative flow with, and then you just, again, are each other's yes men and don't doubt things, I think that the creative process can actually be kind of quick.
Streamlined. Yeah. I can tell you like, basically, we met in September of 2019 when Sarah did a sizzle reel for me for a movie that I was working on pitching. Right. And I was really impressed with her acting and we had just stayed in touch. And I had asked her if she ever wrote scripts and she was like, I would like to, and I would like to play a psychopath. And I was like, cool, let's just meet up and see what happens. And that was in like October. Mm-hmm. And then we wrote Rattled in 1 week. And then before we were even finished, she said, I think we need to make this movie. How much money do we need?
Yeah. I was like, I think we need to make a production company. We were on page 30 of the script. And I was like, I think we need to make a production company. And I think we need to make this movie. And Katie was just like, Okay. And I was like, she was like, when are you thinking? And I was like, I don't know, maybe like Christmas time. She's like, that's in 6 weeks. And I was like, yeah.
And so we did that. And literally once producers came on and started taking some of the weight off of, or some, you mm-hmm. know, some the weight off of our plates for Rattled, that's when Faye came about. And literally while we were shooting Rattled, we had planned Faye on mm-hmm. our one day off on set on Rattled. We shot a scene from Faye.
Yeah.
Because we had a great bathtub in that set.
Oh, it was a great, it was like a bear claw tub thing. Is that what you call
claw
it?
Clawfoot.
Yeah. Clawfoot tub.
Yeah. And but
we were like, definitely need a bloodbath in here.
Yeah. Ordered the bloodbath bomb quick. So, and then we convinced two of our favorite people on our set.
On the Rattled set.
On the Rattled set to come with us to Louisiana to make Faye literally 2 days after we wrapped Rattled.
Yeah. We wrapped Rattled 48 hours later, four girls in a car driving to Louisiana. Yeah. And I just remember in the middle of the Faye shoot, because it was, you know, it was such a small crew. It was just all of us cooped up in this cabin together. And like 3 days in, while we're just crying from exhaustion, Katie's like downloading the footage and doing her own DIT. Like she looks at me and she goes, "We're so dumb." And I was like, "You're the dumbest."
Well, yeah, I was like, what were we thinking?
Yeah, there was a night where I was getting special effects makeup put on at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And then our friend Sarah, who was did like props and set design and all of that stuff. I mean, everybody had a million jobs, but she was just literally feeding me animal crackers with cream cheese.
Just all of us.
Which is surprisingly really good.
Especially at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, but yeah, it was all a very quick process. Kind of felt like beginner's luck.
Yeah.
In a way.
For sure.
And how long was the shoot of Faye?
The time at the cabin, we were there 9 days, I want to say.
Yeah.
And we had a travel day and then a day where we just got equipment and stuff.
And a day where we lost a bunch of footage.
That day, yeah.
Yeah, we were there 9 days filming for 9, but 8 usable.
Yeah, yeah.
Or 7?
I feel like we were there a little over 9 days, but 9 is what we were functioning
sure,
at.
Sure,
something like that.
Yeah.
I usually have a question about any on-set disasters. So do tell me about the day you lost the footage.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, no.
Oh, Lord. Okay, but only if my mom doesn't hear this.
We will not share this podcast with your mother. Go.
She's probably lost hope. So Katie's birthday fell on the second day of filming, and we decided that we were going to kind of have a lighter day. Mm-hmm. And so once we wrapped, we could go to this place called Tacos and Beer, which has amazing queso and margaritas. And that's what Katie wanted to go for her birthday.
Yeah.
So we got done. We got down on time, maybe even a little earlier. And then we went to Tacos and Beer. And Katie and I, well, I mean, all of us,
yeah,
we had just gotten off of making Rattled. So by this point, we're just like so tired and exhausted. But Katie and I decided to go like just really ham on some margaritas. And these are the type of margaritas that come in like a fishbowl.
Yeah. Like we're in New Orleans.
So. Yeah. I mean, we were just like, well, clearly,
yeah,
this is a smart decision. So Katie and I are 3 sheets to the wind. I mean, yeah, we're like one margarita in each and just, you know, eating a bunch of cheese. And so obviously our crew member, Chris drove us home.
Chris drove us
yeah.
home.
So we get back and then Katie's like going through all of the footage from the day. And not only does she realize that I didn't have the special effect makeup that made it look like I had scars on the side of my face, which I definitely needed. I didn't have those scars on my face during one of the scenes, but also we lost a bunch of footage. And it just so happened to be the footage of the film where I am, I guess it's the same word in every language, masturbating. So I was like, no, like it was already a mental hurdle for me to try and do that scene in the first place. But then to get back and be like, all right, we got to shoot it again. And I was like, I'm drunk. I am drunk, sir. I don't know who sir is because we were all women besides Chris. Anyways, I was like, I don't know how to do this. And Katie, Katie, like, is standing like she's on a boat. She's just rocking back and forth. So anyways, we ended up having to reshoot that scene with both Katie and I, you know, not really completely with it, but it turned out great. It worked.
Yeah, it was fine.
It helped some of my anxiety with the whole situation. I was just like, listen, I gotta get through this so I can eat some king cake.
Yeah.
So.
Do you guys have king cake in Scotland?
I have no idea what king cake. You're just saying words to me. You're like the. Oh,
all right. So in New Orleans,
you're just saying words to me.
Are you familiar with Mardi Gras?
Yes, I am familiar with Mardi Gras.
All right. So during Mardi Gras and carnival season, there's a pastry called king cake, and it celebrates Mardi Gras. And there's a plastic baby baked inside of the cake that represents the baby Jesus. Which is strange.
Oh my gosh, we actually have the baby.
Oh yeah, you can see us. We'll show you a king cake,
baby. You can't see it on the podcast, but...
What a cultural experience this is turning out to be.
This is the little tiny baby.
I can confirm, listeners, that they are showing me a small plastic baby that apparently has come from a cake.
Yeah. So there's this fantastic place in New Orleans. It's a bakery called Manny Randazzo's. They make their living being open 3 months a year just baking king cakes. And it's phenomenal. And so that we got one of those for the birthday.
A king cake is kind of like a cheese. This one in particular tastes a little bit like a cheese Danish, where it's got like a cream cheese type, filling.
Bread, like a cinnamon roll or something.
Yeah, and this particular king cake is dense. Some of them are not as dense, but we had picked up a king cake once we got there. And that was my motivation for getting through filming that scene for the second time. We had lost some other footage. So then we ended up having a day where we had to get through how many pages?
20.
We had to get through 20 script pages on this one day, and then
we did it.
I'm surprised we didn't kill each other.
I know.
Yeah.
Was there any moments where tensions were high and you were going to kill each other?
I don't think we were ever going to kill each other. We were all just frustrated.
Yeah. But no one was really mad at anyone else. We were all just so tired.
I feel like everyone got like a little side motivational speech at some point.
Yeah.
We can do this.
Yeah.
Get your tits up.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. But at the same time, I look back on that week and I'm like, we had so much fun, even though in the moment it felt a little hard at times. It's one of my favorite
memories. Yeah. It was a really great experience. It really was.
And how long did that take though? Like, you know, you're filming 20 pages. Was that like a 14-hour day?
That was an 18-hour day.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it was hard.
Because, I mean, there were only five of us there.
Yeah.
Four crew, and then me acting. And so everybody had to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how, but at the same time, I wonder, even if you had to get through that many pages with like a larger crew, it might take the same amount of time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to say that we will never do something like that again, but we probably will.
Yeah. Because, you know, we have scripts with like, mm-hmm. that we know we need bigger budgets for, but then we have little scripts to do in the meantime.
I feel like a lot of independent filmmakers do that. They have like different levels of scripts, ones that they know that you can do straight away, and ones that they've got kind of like more ambitious projects that they're like, yeah, when we can get more money, I'll definitely make this script.
It seems to be
a common thing in various people I've interviewed on the podcast.
Yeah. It's been interesting because the way that we always think about writing a script is to kind of make it smaller so that we can use a smaller budget for it, which we actually enjoy. Like, mm-hmm. I like the process of making something for less.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of worked out in our benefit with COVID and this whole period of time, because a lot of our scripts were like, we could actually pull this off during the pandemic, because mm-hmm. it doesn't require you know, a lot of locations, a lot of cast, a lot of crew. And I was, we're not making Marvel films, is basically.
No, we shot Faye on our phones.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. So, like, the film was shot on iPhones, but I was kept looking at the film being like, it was shot on an iPhone. It's like, you can tell it's, you know, it's, you can tell it's not shot on film or anything, but other than that, you know, like, yeah. I don't think you could tell it's shot on iPhones. And
right, yeah.
So how did you do anything to the footage that to make it more look more like a film, or like, yeah, how did you accomplish that, you know, that, yeah, it doesn't look like it's filmed on a phone?
Yeah. So I had already shot one feature on a phone, so I was very familiar with the software. It's called Filmic Pro. And it just gives you, when you shoot in Filmic Pro and you shoot flat, you can shoot in that like a wider aspect ratio, which makes it more cinematic. We used lenses that attach. We used Moment lenses that attach to the case, the phone case, that also make it a little higher quality and give you a little more shallow depth of field. The iPhone wide camera lens is also just a phenomenal lens in itself. Yeah. It's really good. And then I ran everything through a third-party software called Film Convert, which lets you put grain and basically kind of create an overall look based on any old Fuji or Kodak film stock that you want.
Cool. I was fascinated because I just kept looking at it being like, can't have been on a phone. I don't get it. Like, that's just, I mean, obviously, you know, maybe I'm just judging it against my phone as well, you know.
you get out the camera and you're like, this isn't checking out.
Yeah, it also just lets us, it's another reason that we can move so quickly, because mm-hmm. there's not a huge camera set up, you know?
Yeah, shooting on iPhones is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I love an amazing camera and how that looks, but sure. I mean, for this movie, it was great.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask, you know, it was interesting, you were saying, Katie, you were saying earlier that Sarah just said, I want to make a film where I'm the only person in the film. Sarah, why? What made you like think that? You were just like, I want to, you know, really just want to be like a single person narrative. Like, what inspired you to, be, you know, want to do that?
Because narcissism. I don't know. you know, honestly, I think we really love the Duplass brothers. Have you heard of them?
Yes.
Yeah. So we love the Duplass brothers and how creative they get with, you know, minimal location, minimal cast. And, you know, a lot of their movies are just two people. And I think in my brain, I was just like, okay, well, we could, you know, we could do a two-person movie, or we could just do a one-person movie. Like, I think I was just trying to raise the stakes of like, how could we make a film that's interesting with one person. It just felt like a challenge. And this is slightly an embarrassing thing to admit, but I am like always acting by myself. Like before I go to bed, like I'll like just straight up make up a monologue and say it to myself in the mirror. I'll be like crying and then I'll wipe my eyes and I'm like, okay, good night, moon. I'm just like always acting, or if like I'm driving in the car, like I'm thinking up things and I'm always just literally acting to the air in front of me. I think that's maybe a part of it, of just like this idea of how could we make a movie where a woman is essentially talking to herself the whole time, or having this whole experience and these range of emotions, but she's the only one in the room.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and especially during isolation and this time in the world, like so many people find themselves by themselves all the time. And we live so much of our lives, you know, I lived in LA for a while. I was always just in the car by myself. You know, but so just the idea of making a movie where we just, we see what so much of us experience all the time.
Yeah.
And also narcissism.
And I was also going to ask you, Sarah, is there anything in particular that you do to get into a character? I know like different actors use different devices, whether it be an accent or a walk or you know, something, the psychological thing. Like, what's kind of your thing to get you into the character?
I don't know if I've identified like a certain thing. I kind of just get into it however I can. And a lot of it is just intuitive and feeling based. I mean, you know, when you step on set and you get into the character's clothes and into the makeup, like that, obviously it adds a whole new level of, like, if you hadn't found it by then, you're gonna find it. And by it, I mean like the person. But the best way I can describe how these characters kind of come to me, we always say like I channel a character, but it really kind of feels like the best comparison, you know, on bikes, how bikes have those little gears on them and you can like switch the gear and it clunks down and like whatever. It feels like an internal bike gear where like I like click into something and it like, it's this internal shift and then everything operates from this different space. So the way that I walk, the way that I talk, the way that I'm dressing, it feels like I'm just a different person. Mm-hmm. When we were getting ready to film Rattled, like leading up to Rattled, and I was getting into the headspace of my character, Addison, I like just naturally had started dressing differently and, you know, acting, I don't know, it just...
You were getting these facial tics.
Yeah, I was getting facial tics, which was not cute. But Addison had facial tics. And I wouldn't say, I'm not like a method actor. It's not like I'm just keeping the character the whole time or I can't break and have lunch with everyone and not be, you know, in that space. But yeah, it just feels like there's an internal shift that goes on and then everything is defined by that feeling. I don't know if that makes any sense, but...
No, that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to talk about the kind of the structure of the film as well. Mm-hmm. So obviously your character, Sarah, the only character, mm-hmm. there is sections of the movie where you're talking directly to camera and, you know, you're kind of giving a commentary on your life leading up to this moment kind of thing. Did you kind of put that in because you thought maybe like just purely having it in the cabin would be too claustrophobic or like what was the reason for kind of inserting that into the narrative?
We knew we were going to do that. Like we knew we were going to do some monologues on a black box, and in the script and in the original cut, it was just black title cards that said black box monologue because we knew we were going to write them later,
mm-hmm.
and that they would somehow, that they would operate as a device to tie the story together, and they could save us when a scene didn't work.
Yeah. There are a few continuity things that were so gracefully smoothed over our flag boxes. But yeah, it just... Katie had the idea for the black box segments, and she was like, I think it would be really cool to just have them dispersed throughout the film. And then once we had finished filming, you know, all of the footage at the cabin, Katie started the rough edit of the film. And then I would go through what she was editing, and when a black box monologue thing would come up, I would think of a personal face story and then kind of jot that down, and then we would go over those and flesh them out. Those are my favorite parts of the film, honestly. Yeah, some of my favorite parts of the film, because it, like, even though the story that Faye is telling might not directly address what's going on in the film, it gives you so much more of a rounded idea of who she is and why she is the way that she is, mm-hmm. why she's dealing with this particular life circumstance, you know, the way that she is. I tried to think of a different way to say that.
Well, it's a way to get
exposition in a different way that it's normally told. It's not like, oh, I grew up like this and this happened. It's just these very specific incidents.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of anything else that does that.
That snowball. Well, we had also seen Bronson.
Bronson sort of something similar.
There's a movie called Bronson with Tom Hardy. Yes. Hardy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a fan of Nicholas Winding Refn's films.
And we loved those sort of theatrical moments in Bronson where he's addressing the audience. So we had seen that movie, maybe that probably crept into our brains and had some influence, but.
Mm-hmm.
And was that at all a fear? You know, you're talking theatrical there. Was that a fear of making this movie in terms of like not making it too stagey, you know, because, you know, that could easily happen on a movie like this that has a single character, for the most part, a single location.
Yeah.
Was it a fear that it was going to be too stagey?
Yeah, was it a fear? Were you ever concerned that you're like, this is going to look too much like theater and not cinema?
No, not really.
I mean, honestly, we were just sort of going with.
But it was so experimental.
Yeah, it was so experimental. I don't think we even we were like, if this ends up to be just a piece of shit,
it can might.
Yeah, you can. I brought up the episode explicit and stuff. It's like, swear away.
But yeah, we were just kind of piecemealing it together in a way and just sort of going where inspiration took us. I don't even know if we had time to think about
if
it wasn't going to work,
if the aesthetic would change or.
But also because it was so small and because the Black Box monologues actually was just Katie and I in the room. So if something wasn't working out or if something felt too like stagey or theatrical, I mean, we had all the time in the world to change it in the moment, which is an advantage of having such a small crew.
Yeah.
You mentioned as well, you know, talking about that kind of Bronson thing of kind of having that in the back of your head. Was there any other kind of major inspirations for the film that you were drawing from?
For Faye. I mean, I think the idea of just going to a cabin and shooting was Creep.
Mm-hmm.
We love Creep, but yeah. The DuPont Brothers film.
Yeah.
And then... was there any other?
Like movie wise, I don't think it felt like brand new territory since there are very, very few films made with just one actor. And
yeah,
especially with a female.
It's not something done that often in horror.
Yeah. So
I guess
we didn't really have any references.
Yeah. Single person narratives are pretty rare. And I can't think off the top of my head of one that is in horror or that has the female who is the single character.
Right.
Yeah.
All the ones I can think of are either dramas or sci-fi and all male characters.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
that's fair enough. I did pick up on, okay, there was a couple of Exorcist references, and I was thinking that in terms of the thing that is haunting Faye, we won't give any spoilers, it's a little Exorcist like and it's a little kind of Grudge like as well, with the kind of clicking and kind of. Was that at all in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, we were, when we talked about this, I mean, this is hard to do without spoilers.
Well, I mean, The Exorcist is one of our favorite films. It's in both of our top fives of films. And so it probably, I think it's actually found its way into probably a lot of our scripts, especially the ones that lean horror or psychological thriller. But even though Exorcist is not a psychological, you get what I mean. It probably influences us without us even.
Yeah. The scratches on her face or the wounds, I just wanted to make sure that it's something that could look realistic. Like there's glass sticking out of them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Little tiny pieces of glass.
And then Captain Howdy.
Captain Howdy, yeah, that was the reference too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we used a ton of overused tropes, but I think with like kind of doing that while winking, mm-hmm. you know, or like a little tongue in cheek with it. Like she absolutely makes fun of and calls out being in a cabin in a woods with a Ouija board, you know?
Yeah. Actually, speaking of The Exorcist, Katie's least favorite screen grab in all of cinema is of Linda Blair's
It literally makes my heart stop for a second. Like, I can't stand it.
And there's this part in Rattled where I look like Linda Blair. And Katie had a very hard time staring at my face that day, which is difficult.
I had a hard time on Faye.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't remember because you were blind.
Oh, that's right. The contacts that I wear in Faye made me blind. So everybody would have to leave me around the room, which was a blast.
Yeah, this is when we developed trust.
I was like, can somebody take me to go pee, please?
How long did you have them in?
Oh my gosh, for hours. Because we had...
It was too hard to take them in and out.
Yeah, it was too hard to take them. Okay. They were really large because they're, you know, they white out your whole eye. And so they're not like the size of regular contacts. So they take a very long time to put in and they were so uncomfortable. And they made me blind as a bat.
Yeah.
I could see like little orbs of light if the light was on, but we had the lights pretty low.
Yeah.
But yeah, so people were leading me around. I was crying at one point. I don't want to be blind anymore. Like, but yeah, I looked like Linda Blair at a few times during Faye and I couldn't see, but Katie was apparently having emotions come up about that.
There's some strong feelings. There's some like takes in the footage where you just hear me going like, oh. like just looking at her.
She had to edit out her own shudder.
Well, that's a good sign, you know, when the filmmaker themselves is getting freaked out by their own movie, surely.
Yeah, true. That happened to Sarah D, who was our producer / art everything angel food.
Yeah, like, we call her an angel.
She was operating one of the other phones, and there was one scene in the bedroom, and then when it was over, Sarah D's just like, I did not like that.
Yeah, just like, she's so sweet. She's just like this. Sweet southern girl.
She's like, and she made me hot.
She's like, I didn't like that at all.
So yeah.
And I was just blind, like, what? What do you mean?
Yeah. It's that bloody smile.
It was the bloody smile.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
It really freaked her out. It freaked me out too. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
I was intrigued as well. Like, Sarah, you mentioned that you had lived out in LA for a while. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, is obviously kind of the place to be if you're an actress. So how did you end up in Nashville?
Well, so I wasn't acting, funny enough, out in LA. I went to college for music, for singing and songwriting. So I was in LA kind of trying to do that and not being successful at it. I had gotten into kind of a crummy management situation out there for music, and it ended kind of terribly. And I was like, I just need to move. I don't want to be in LA anymore. And I moved to Nashville because I had friends here, and I had actually lived here for a short period of time before I'd ever moved to LA. So I came out here and I had no expectations of nowhere in my mind did I think that I would be acting out here, or screenwriting or making films. I just kind of wanted to not be in LA. And I used to teach a fitness class. So that's what I was doing here. And, then slowly but surely I started getting back into music, and I made a music video for a song that I put out in 2017 or 18. And I worked with this awesome director who's one of my mentors and good friends. And he's been a filmmaker for years. And we kind of made this little horror. It kind of felt like a little tiny horror indie film of a music video. And I was like,
I like acting.
and I acted growing up. I mean, I was like kind of I did a lot of theater and stuff like that, commercials when I was a kid. And I had taken some acting classes when I was out in LA, but I had never fully gone for it. But yeah, so I made that music video and I was like, oh, okay, sounds good. So I joined an acting class here and found out that there's actually like a really, really wonderful community of actors and filmmakers in Nashville and the Southeast in general. A couple years later, I met Katie.
And here we are.
Yeah, in 2019, and here we are. I had made this like little short film that I directed and acted in, and Katie happened to see it, and asked through some friends for my number, and was like, "Hey, you want to be in my sizzle reel?" And yes. that's when it all happens.
Yeah.
Okay. And Katie, have you always been Nashville? Is that?
No, I'm from Louisiana. I spent 10 years in New Orleans working on movies. I went to film school there. And then I kind of left the studio system to pursue independent films. And at the time, the script that was getting a lot of traction for me dealt with country music. So I like moved here and started songwriting and like diving into that community for creative research. And I just never left.
Nashville is a city. Nashville is a super special city.
It really is.
It's like, it's just the creative community here is unlike any I have ever experienced. Everyone here wants to help.
Yeah, it's highly collaborative.
It's so collaborative and supportive. Like, competition here is super healthy. Like, everybody's trying to be their best, but not so that they can, like, push anybody else down, but just because they feel so inspired by other people. Like,
right.
We wouldn't have been able to make these films if we lived in LA because it would be hard to get, you know, a friend to drive from West Hollywood to the Valley. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Just on a given day. But everyone here, like we had people for Rattled. We had PAs just, we had more people want to help us than we could afford to have on set.
Yeah.
Because the people in this city are just so eager to create and to make things and to help.
Yeah. And I can say the same thing for New Orleans. Like I have crew members that drive that Chris drove from LA to come work on Faye.
Yeah.
That is literally across the country.
Yeah.
And our sound mixer drove in from like 8 hours from Louisiana, just lived on set for Rattled. And those are just people that I worked with in the film community back in New Orleans. So it's, I don't know. There's a familial aspect to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really great.
It would be hard to justify moving to a bigger city that's more associated, I guess, with making films like LA or New York when you've got
this community,
this kind of, atmosphere. I feel really fortunate.
Yeah, same.
And also just like, blown
away.
Yeah.
Like, how did that happen? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, but I mean, you know, I'm learning all sorts of new things today. I did not realize that there was like a...
He's like ready to come visit Nashville.
Yeah.
I'm actually on like studio right now.
Well, whenever lockdown ends, which is, who knows? Yes, I wasn't aware that there was like a kind of big filmmaking community out there. I mean, obviously, I've had a lot of guests from America, but the majority are, you know, either from LA or New York. I've had a handful of guests from Austin as well, so I'm aware.
Austin has a great filmmaking community too.
So yeah, so I was aware of that, but not so much Nashville, which I just obviously associate my head with country music and
yeah.
I mean that's a lot of it. There's mostly country music.
Yeah. There's a lot of it. Yeah.
And I was wondering as well. Like I always ask this question to film directors who also edit their own films. Like I think that's a very interesting thing to do, and I always marvel at like just you know, having that kind of, creating that kind of distance. Because I know even as somebody who is like a kind of part-time film critic, you know, sometimes editing my own reviews, like if there's a particular thing that I've written that I'm like, that's a good line, but it's completely unnecessary. You know, like sometimes I find it difficult to take out, and like it's a movie's much more than that. So like, yeah, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, okay, so when I went to film school, I taught editing. I was a graduate assistant, so I taught editing, and learning editing and paying attention to editing made me, I think, a better director. And I direct like an editor. Like, there might be something that I forgot to put in the shot list that I just want to go grab real quick, or I see something and I know exactly where I'm going to put it. Yeah, but I think because I'm so trained in that, I can just turn off director brain and go into editor mode. I mean, there's so much of Faye that's not in it. There's so much that we shot and it's just like, it's not there. Cause I can be like, okay, this isn't working, or okay, that line doesn't even make sense, or this performance is a little not, you know, or this, I thought this was funny at the time and it's actually not. You know, there's just certain things. And then I always rely on feedback too. We'll send out test screeners and get feedback. And yeah, you know.
Something though about Katie, which just absolutely blows my mind. She remembers, her brain is insane with, she'll remember like, oh, it was scene 37, take 4 on the B cam, the second half of the take. Like, her brain, like, she remembers every single little detail of the process. So not only is she directing like an editor, so it makes the time go quicker, but also when she sits down to edit, it's a very it's a quick process, because she just,
you call it my Rain Man brain.
Yeah, I call it the Rain Man brain, because she remembers everything. It's just absolutely incredible. I don't know how she does that. I don't remember what, you know, day it is. Katie remembers.
Well, I'm always watching, like, if I don't have a monitor, or if I'm not, you know, like on Faye, I shot it too, so I could see it and I knew. But like, I'm always hugging a camera operator's back, like during shots, even if it's a moving shot, you know. Or, you know, if we have the, like with the budget, sometimes I get a monitor. But sometimes I'm just like hovering, and I'm always watching. And yeah, like, I know which performances are my favorite, and then there are always just moments that just like hit me on set, and they hit so hard that I remember, you know.
Yeah, it's really cool to see.
And did you feel kind of pretty confident directing this one now that, like, I mean, this is what, like, your phase, like your third feature? So do you feel you're kind of into your filmmaking groove?
Yeah, phase my third feature. Yeah. Definitely learned a lot of lessons on my first one. Even Rattled felt like so smooth. Mm-hmm. Rattled was smooth. I mean, we had a bad day.
We had one very bad day.
But it was smooth and as a whole. And then, you know, Faye was just, again, like that familial aspect. It was it was me and 4 of my closest friends making a movie together. So it was awesome, you know.
Ranking Rattled's bad day against the day you lost the footage in Faye, which one was worse?
Rattled.
My word. Unanimous.
Oh, it was a real top to bottom the full day. It was just like everything that could go wrong went wrong. We started out filming at this location for a hospital scene, and in Nashville, one of the downsides to filming in Nashville is that there are a lot of trains and they are loud. So we were at this location, we didn't realize that it was right next to the train tracks, and we had to pause like every,
and the, it was freezing. This hospital set is like a room that's built inside of like an abandoned
warehouse. Yeah.
So you feel like you need a tetanus shot the second you walk in.
Yeah.
It's just everything's rusted and you might fall through the floor, but we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
And then, So you get there, and then so it's freezing. Everyone is shivering.
Yeah, it's like we're serial killers. Live. And then, like, it's just
literally every 5 minutes, there's a train that just rattles the whole building. like that's how the day starts.
Yeah, and also our sound guy Tim, who we love, but Tim is very particular about things. His slate was broken that day, and he was all stressed out about it. What else happened? Oh, so then we get back from that location. We come back. We were using an Airbnb for the set house. And this, when we got the tour of this Airbnb, the people who lived there, they were so excited that we were going to be filming a movie there. We didn't tell them what it was going to be about because then they probably wouldn't have been so excited anymore. We were like, yeah, it's just like, you know, two sisters getting back together. nobody's dying ever. nobody's getting killed. But they were this really kind couple, but they were like, everything in their home was custom made. Like they were well traveled and like very cultured. And they were like, these drapes are one of a kind. It's this shade of mustard that will never be reproduced. And like, just everything was one of a kind. So we were really careful on set, as careful as we possibly could be. But in one of the scenes, there was some blood splatter and the blood splurted back. There was like something that happened with the pump that we were using to have sort of the blood.
It's what she like, stabbed a character in the eye.
I stab a character in the eye with a pencil and the blood flew back and just got all over these drapes. And we were like,
we just froze like, oh God.
Katie and I literally just, I mean, we locked eyes and it was like, shit. What are we gonna do? So then we have PAs upstairs. We take those drapes down. We replace them with something else. We have PAs upstairs scrubbing with toothbrushes, trying to get the blood out. Katie and I are in the kitchen playing worst case scenario. We're like, okay, worst case scenario. The drapes are worth this much. And also the blood, we had a bunch of blood, fake blood on the wooden floor. And when we cleaned it all up, when people would walk on it, blood started coming back up through the wood, the cracks in the floor. We were like, oh my word. Okay, so worst case scenario, if we have to replace the wood floor in this house, like we're just counting up the thousands of dollars that we could be responsible for that probably were more than the entire movie's budget.
Thankfully, like sweet Sarah D again, she's using her body weight and towels and a hair dryer, and she's just laying on the wood. Trying to get it all up.
One of our actresses that day, she was just having a hard time. She had, it was a dialogue heavy day for her and she couldn't remember these certain lines. So then we had to like, it was just like,
it's like call for a second lunch. We're going on hour 14.
And then at the end of the night, we've got the drapes soaking in that wonderful bathtub upstairs with a bunch of Dawn soap. And Katie looks at me and she goes, Sarah, meet me out on the porch. And I was like, okay, sounds good. So we like finish, we wrap shooting that day. We get on the porch swing. So we're swinging back and forth. Katie doesn't smoke cigarettes, but she lights up a cigarette. And I was like, oh my gosh, she looked like Tony Soprano. I mean, she just looked like she was about to like call a hit on someone. And she's just like sitting there swinging back and forth with her cigarette, just taking these long drags. She goes, I've got an idea. And I was like, okay, who are we killing? She's like, I'm going to sage the drapes. And I just some silence there. And I go, you're going to what? She's like, I'm going to sage the drapes. And I go, with sage, like what people use, like
to smudge away bad spirits. That's what I'm going to do.
So Katie, and I was like, okay, sounds good. That's great. I thought we were going to murder someone. Okay. No, cool. Yeah. Let's sage the drapes. So we go upstairs. Katie just starts like saying incantations, like just smudging the entire room with this sage. And an hour later we checked.
The blood was gone.
It came out of the drapes. However, there was some shrinkage in the drape material once we finally like got them dry. And like a couple months later, the people who own the Airbnb called our producer and they were like, why are our drapes 4 inches shorter on one side of the room than the other?
We
were like,
I have no idea.
They're like, that's really crazy. It
has to be whoever was there before us.
Like, yeah.
What are you talking about?
But yeah, that day was the worst day. It doesn't sound that bad when we say it back, like, but it's
funny now.
Tensions were high. Yeah.
Comedy is tragedy with enough time.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I can take a loan out from my parents to pay for this wooden floor. Like, there might have also been a ghost in the basement.
Oh, there was definitely blood on the stairs.
Blood on the stairs. So honestly, yeah. I don't know, those Airbnb owners, maybe they...
It was a dungeon down there.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was.
You thought you were just making a film about a murder house.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Turns out
we're just upsetting whoever was there.
I definitely think this is our...
Yeah. What?
Oh, no, I was just, after the two synopsises, I definitely think this is our third kind of dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun!
So, I was also going to ask, so both Ranald and Faye kind of deal with psychological issues, mental illness, and is that a particular topic that interests you both, and is that something that you'll continue to make films about?
I think so. Yeah, it's definitely something we're both interested in, and trauma and the effects of trauma. I've always said something that I enjoy working with Sarah specifically about is that she's not necessarily like, she's like, I want to play a psychopath, but she's very interested in what made that psychopath. So it's not only let's examine this monster, but let's see what kind of monster made this monster, you know?
Yeah.
And digging a little deeper and is just more interesting to me. And yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think psychology is interesting to both of us. And, you know, anytime we can sort of expose why a person is the way that they are, is a passion for both of us, and just creating a space of empathy for even, you know, even the monsters. Mm-hmm. So.
And I was also going to ask about what have you got lined up now for the film? Have you been submitting to festivals? What do you have any plans in terms of screenings and stuff like that?
Yeah, they're both going to be on the festival circuit this year. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just one of those you have to follow as if productions or the updates. But yeah, they'll be in the festival circuit this year for sure.
I just want to add really quick, just as a follow-up. I wasn't necessarily saying either that like mental illness means that somebody is a monster. So I just want to be clear about that. Just saying in the context of the films, we have our villains. And stuff like that. But we definitely try and be sensitive to just kind of opening something up a little bit more so that we can start a conversation, yeah, and just kind of like understand and have empathy for people and see what can sometimes manifest because of something like unrattled childhood trauma or something like that. The best thing that I think movies do for us is we get to see why people are the way that they are. We get to see them behind closed doors.
Right.
We get to see maybe where they come from, or, you know, because when you meet just a person in life, you don't know what they've experienced or what they've been through. So we can sort of judge them based upon just, you know, these initial interactions that we have, just knowing them at this one point in their life. But, you know, in a movie, you can explore a person's whole life
and
what led them to this exact moment and why they're making the choice that they're making.
Yeah. With horror specifically, it delves into exploring fears and what we're afraid of. And it also lets us get into the darkest side of humanity and human nature in a safe space.
Yeah. I mean, neither of us would claim to you know, understand mental illness, and we both have so much compassion and empathy towards people who struggle with it, but you know, it is definitely a passion for us to kind of like at least go in and explore and what kind of storylines come from that. I just wanted to add that.
That's fair enough. No, I get that. And Yeah, and then, you know, obviously that comes from a good place. And I do think, yeah, horror is a good platform to explore these issues in a way that is both interesting and entertaining, you know, because... And I think it makes it sometimes, like a horror movie, it's an easier way to transmit that message than in a kind of heavy drama or something like that, you know. But,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I love horror films that have something to say.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
It's cool.
Absolutely. So as we kind of near towards the end of this interview, I was wondering...
No!
Oh no!
I'm trying to miss you! The Scottish accent! I want it!
Well, as we keep going with this interview for another 14 hours, knock. It'll just be like a day shooting.
Yeah,
it's a 4-part podcast. Yeah.
So I was going to ask you kind of like, so you obviously have a bunch of scripts ready to go. Can you tell us about any of them? Is there one kind of at the top of the pile that's maybe going to get made in the near-ish future?
We have two scripts right now that we're coming into a close on who we're going to be making them with. One of them, it's called Under the Cover, and it's a psychological thriller. It's kind of reminiscent of like those 90s erotic thrillers.
Basic Instinct, Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, just kind of that genre that seems to have gotten lost, but such, you know, there were so many great films in that arena. And then we have this other movie that we are utterly obsessed with, that we love with our whole hearts.
Yeah.
It's probably our favorite script that we've written. It's called Leg. L-E-G like your appendage. It is a story really about a mother and a daughter, I don't know how much about it.
I don't know
should we say.
I don't know.
It is
near and dear.
Yeah, it's near and dear. So hopefully you'll be seeing a weird movie called Leg. Yeah. So
it's a weird movie.
Yeah,
Express.
It's weird. It's a weird one.
It's a weird one. We'll give the log. Do you want to give the log line?
Sure.
It is
impoverished young woman struggles to come to terms with both her own mortality and her daughter's desire to have one of her legs amputated.
Yeah, it's
something like that.
Basically about a woman who finds out that that she has stage 4 cancer, and her daughter deals with something called BID, which is body integrity identity disorder, and it's when somebody has an intense desire to amputate a healthy limb. Both of those things kind of come to a head throughout the movie, but it's really kind of a love story between the mom and the daughter. Story of ultimate acceptance and love for each other. And there's a very gory scene in it. It kind of like The Exorcist. The Exorcist.
Structurally, very similar.
Full circle moment back to that, where The Exorcist kind of plays out, and it's really a love story between the mom and the daughter. And then there's this penultimate scene that's you know, hard to watch, which is the exorcism. And in our movie, it's something else that we won't give away, but
you can probably guess.
But it's something special. It's kind of got us. So we see it taking place in the deep South, Louisiana, kind of in Cajun country.
Cajun country.
Really gritty kind of tone, similar to like Winter's Bone. Yeah, with like an Americana soundtrack, Southern Gothic. A little bit of an amalgamation of genres. But we like it. And I would get to have a really Southern accent, which I'm just so thrilled about.
That sounds That sounds really interesting. I'll look forward to checking that out. And it just leaves me to thank you both very much for coming on the show today. And please do come back on anytime that you want. With either of those roles.
We would love to. And this has been an awesome interview. So yeah, thank you for having us. Thanks so much.
That was my guests, KD and Sarah there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. As always, I would also like to thank you, listener, for tuning in to this latest episode of New Horror Express. And remember, if you like what you heard, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Unfortunately, that is all for this time, but be sure to tune in next time when I will have another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya!